Welcome to the Call Lavender Podcast, a podcast that talks about what's happening in the world we live in and how it affects queer folks. I'm PJ.
I'm David.
Kaija.
Oh, I'm so tired. We flew back today. Let me tell you, I want to go on a rant for a little bit.
Oh, Lord Jesus.
So, you know that I'm going to just be honest, listeners, my friends, everyone knows, I love to complain. And I love to complain about things that I feel are inconvenience because they deserve to be complained about. One of my complaints, I hate flying. And it's not because I am afraid of being in the air. That's not it. It has nothing to do with flying, the actual act of flying. I hate airports. And the reason why I hate airports, because one, I hate people. People get on my nerves. From security on to the gate, people get on my nerves. So I'm always angry when I'm in an airport. I'm always irritated because someone always pisses me off. Like today, I have TSA pre-check here.
Okay.
Because, you know, I don't do normal security. So I'm in TSA pre-check. So when you get TSA pre-check, you know that it's supposed to go faster because, you know. Every time I'm in a TSA pre-check line, there's some older person of a certain age who takes forever. I'm like, lady, if you have TSA pre-check, that means that you know what you need out in your hand when you approach the TSA agent. So I'm going to need you to have your ID, or passport, and your boarding pass. Why are you looking through your handbag for your ticket? Why are you looking through your handbag for your ID? This should have been already out. That pisses me off. Okay, and then, so we flew Frontier this time. And I know, the only reason I flew Frontier is because I had a $50 gift card for Frontier because I wanted at this, like, interview thing. Anyway, so I was like, oh, we'll fly Frontier. First of all, do you know, when people say, like, these budget airlines like Spirit or Frontier, and they're like, oh, they charge you for everything, they're not lying. Do you know Frontier charges you a fee if you decide to go to a gate agent to ask a question?
What in the world?
So when you check in, they'll say, like, hey, do you want to do self-service throughout your whole flight, or do you need assistance? If you need assistance, you need to pay $80. I was like, what? So we're paying extra to talk to a customer service rep at the gate, and that's their job, to assist people on a flight?
That's why you can't trust these folks.
And I was like, okay. So then me and Brian get to the gate. Frontier is so low class because why is every seat in the waiting area ripped up and you can see the foam inside the seat? It smelled like urine, and they don't even have digital screens. You know, at the gate where they have a digital screen about, like, where you're going, the time it is, time of boarding, they don't even have a digital screen. They have those old, like, post-it ticker board things. I said, this is so low class. See, this is why you don't, I was like, this, I hate this. I hate it.
Why don't you but just that was my little go rant. United or one of them?
Well, I had that coupon.
Oh, that's right, that's right, that's right.
So thank goodness the flight was only an hour and like 15 minutes. But yeah, I had to use that coupon. So I used it for this trip. But
wow.
Yeah, that was my rant. But other than that, we're back.
So for listeners, I don't know if y'all know, but so I live in Cleveland, Ohio. Obviously, Paul lives in New York, and then Nigel also lives in Ohio. but she lived far away from me. She lives, you know, a couple hours away. So this past weekend, we went down to visit Nyjah, to walk around the campus and all that stuff. But it was a good time. It was good to, I've only been on that campus once, and it's been like 8 years. Don't start, Paul, because you know that's not what happened. You know good and damn well that is not what happened. Oh, God. But yeah, it was really fun. I had a good time. That drive was long, though. And them cornfields was something else. But yeah, it went really good.
Yeah, this weekend, honestly, my weekend was just filled with being with friends and loved ones. So Saturday I was with y'all, and it was really, really good seeing y'all. I always have a good time with y'all, though. So that was really exciting. It was
for no reason.
That was annoying. And then all that walking, my back was hurting, David's back was hurting. I'm like,
y'all didn't tell me the campus was that big.
I forgot how big it was, because I told you listeners, I live literally across the street from our campus, and I am never over there. Like, I know it's all types of renovations and stuff, but yeah, even I forgot, because I haven't been over there in a while. And so doing all that walking, going to like our old buildings that we had classes in was too much. And we only did half the campus.
Half the campus. I was going to say, half the campus.
Right. Yeah, we stayed closer to where I live. Because, yeah, I was like, going all the way to the other side, you basically going to be by the freeway at that point.
Yeah. Sorry. Let me make a correction. I don't live in Cleveland. I live in Akron. So just to throw that out there, I don't know why I said.
I would let him just say
Nyjah. I was about to say, no, bitch, you live in Akron, but I didn't say anything.
Listen, it's been a long day, okay? Because I just realized
you that Paul.
Oh my god.
So that was Saturday. We got something to eat. Which is crack. Oh my gosh. But yeah, we got something to eat and just, you know, spend some time with each other. They finally got a chance. Y'all finally got a chance to meet Jax. They haven't met my dog. So that was cool. And then Sunday I was with one of my girlfriends. She lives in Toledo. And so I was out in Toledo on Sunday with her. So yeah, it was just, you know what, just being with loved ones, and I thoroughly enjoyed the weekend. And now it's Tuesday and we're at work. Well, I had to work.
Unfortunately. And shout out to my good Judies, Kathleen and Maurice Mo, for their wedding this past weekend. It was lovely. It was beautiful. I'm so happy for you guys.
I meant to ask, like, how that went. Like, because I saw some pictures, but it was good. Awesome.
Beautiful. It was in a botanical gardens, which, for those who don't know, the Cleveland Botanical Gardens is beautiful. They have outdoor gardens and they have an indoor garden. And it was in the Japanese outdoor garden, and it was good weather. It was beautiful. Her dress was great. I saw some old chums, high school chums.
Really?
Some of them I did. I'll talk more about this after the pod, David, about who it was, but. But yeah, shout out to them for the wedding. And then we do have some, it's giving sex. Oh, sorry. I'm all over the place.
In honor of, you know, me recently turning 30, Paul turning 30 this year. I saw this quote and I wanted to include it. It is, aging is an extraordinary process whereby you become the person you always should have been. That quote is by the legend, the man, the myth, the legend, David Bowie.
Wonderful quote. Love that quote. All right, we're going to do some It's Giving Success shout outs. We do have quite a bit because, you know, my world of theater, the Tony Award nominations came out. And there are some favorites that I am happy to see being nominated. But congrats to all the Tony Award nominees. For those who don't know, Tony Awards, it awards people in Broadway. So in the EGOT, Tony is the T in EGOT. So a special shout out to Jocelyn Beal, the playwright for Jaja's African Hair Braiding. Congrats. David Adjmi, playwright for Stereophonic, which Brian and I are going to see tomorrow. Brandon Jacob Jenkins for playwright of Appropriate. Paula Vogel for playwright for Mother Play. Jim Parsons for best supporting actor in the play Mother Play. Jonathan Groff for best leading actor in Merrily We Roll Along. Sarah Paulson for best leading actress in Appropriate. Eddie Redmayne for best leading actor in Cabaret. And there were so many others. And then also congrats to Jennifer Hudson and Orville Peck for getting honored at this year's GLAAD Media Awards in New York City. But okay, so those are is giving us shout outs. All right, before we move on to our topics, let's go ahead and take a quick break. And we're back. So, our first topic, we're not going to spend too much time on, but, you know, the talk of the town was all about Amanda Seales. And we, for those who don't know, Amanda Seales is a comedian, an actress, best known for her role in Insecure. She's done a lot of other things, too. But, you know, that thing that was, in terms of, like, acting, that's her biggest acting role. But she was a commentator, she was a podcaster, she's worked in the music industry, she's worked in television, she's worked in producing. So she's been around for a while. But for those who don't know, she may be best known for Insecure. But anyway, she was the next victim on Club Shay Shay. And she had a lot to say. And once again, this interview was 3 hours long. It seems like every Club Shay Shay interview is like 3 hours long. And I'm at this point, I'm just like, y'all need to have a better editing team because y'all need to edit this down. This is getting ridiculous. So it was 3 hours long, and Amanda Seales let us have it. Amanda Seales is known for being very vocal about her opinion. She's very opinionated. She's very intelligent. She's very well-versed in what she believes in. I'll give her that. But she talked a lot about the industry and some stories about her experience in Hollywood. And the one thing I want to talk about specifically is she brought up her time on Insecure and working with Issa Rae. That was probably the biggest story of the whole thing. There was others, but this was like the biggest. And so I'm going to just do a really quick recap. So for this part, there was a, so every year for the Emmys, there's an Emmys party, which all of the celebrities or nominees come together and they celebrate. It's just a Hollywood party. Well, they created a Black Emmys party, because they realized that the Emmys party was very white, which not a shocker. So they made a black Emmys party, full of Black celebrities and Black actors. So the second Black Emmys party was co-led by a bunch of people, but specifically it was led by Issa Rae's publicist. So Issa Rae's publicist, Vanessa, was one of the planning committee, was on the planning committee. So Amanda Seales was invited to this party by Jesse Williams. Jesse Williams is an actor. He's known from Grey's Anatomy. Cool. So he invited her and he was like, hey, and I guess he was part of the planning committee. And he was like, hey, you know, come through. We'll put you on a list, blah, blah. So Amanda Seales arrives at the party. She had some other folks with her. But when she arrived to the party, there was obviously a door, a check-in person. And the check-in person was basically like, hey, you are allowed in. Amanda, you are not allowed in. So all of like Amanda's guests were allowed in except for Amanda. So Amanda's like, what the hell? She's like, I have on this list that you're specifically not allowed. So basically it kind of seemed like Amanda was on a list that said, do not let in. So Amanda's like, okay, who was saying I can't be in? The person's like, I can't tell you that right now, but you are on this list to not let in. End of story. So Amanda walks away. She gets a text message from a friend. She sees a friend walking by. He's like, why are you out here? And she's like, well, I'm not allowed in. Her friend was like, why isn't Amanda allowed in? The check-in person's like, she's not allowed in. I was given specific orders that she's not allowed in. So Amanda's like, whatever. So she's like leaving again. She goes to another friend. Another friend is like, why are you out here? Let's go back in. Same thing. But this time Amanda gets in. She's like, you know what? Fuck this. I'm going in anyway. So Amanda goes in. Security was called. And a security guard comes and he's like, hey, sorry, but you have to leave. And she's like, why? Who was this person saying I can't be in here? So the security guard leaves. He was like, I'll find out. So security guard leaves. He comes back. Three other security guards come as well. And they're all like big, bulky, stereotypical security guards. And one of them is like hostile. He's like, hey, you need to get the fuck out of here. You're not supposed to be in here. Don't cause a scene. Get the fuck out. So Amanda gets mad. And she's like, who is saying I can't be here? And then eventually they tell her that it's the publicist, Vanessa. So Amanda's like, get Vanessa. I'm not leaving until Vanessa tells me to my face that I'm not supposed to be here. So moving forward, it gets worse. And the security guards basically in a moment sort of got physical, meaning they chest bump her to try to get her out. It turned physical. Eventually, Amanda Seals was exited out. This was a huge moment. She was embarrassed. She said she was crying on her way home. She couldn't believe this happened. She calls Issa Rae because it's Issa Rae's publicist, who was this person who then let her in. Issa Rae is like, hey, I heard what happened. I had nothing to do with it. This is between you and her. So Amanda's like, what the hell? So eventually, Issa tells her, and I'm skipping some stuff to make it quick. Eventually, Issa Rae is like, hey, I need you to call Vanessa. Y'all need to squash this because I don't want it to affect work, meaning the set of Insecure, because they both are going to be on set. So Vanessa calls Amanda. She's like, hey, yes, I was the one who didn't let you in. Do you want to know why I didn't let you in? And Amanda's like, no, bitch, no, I really don't give a shit. So basically, Vanessa was like, I didn't let you into the party because I just don't like you. End of stories. Amanda returns to Insecure set to film the last season. Basically, everyone was like not talking to Amanda. Amanda was ostracized on set. Fast forward, Amanda was like, you know what? After that interaction with Issa Rae and her not being a good leader handling the situation, I used to take up for Issa Rae. I used to always defend Issa Rae for what she's done for Black women and Black people in the industry. But now I'm done defending her. So that's kind of where it ended with that story. And then she goes on and on and on about other stuff.
So let me say, at some point, and I hate saying it like this because, you know, if that story is true, then yes, Amanda was the victim in that situation. But, you know, at some point, Amanda Seals is either the unluckiest person on earth or she's the cause of some of this. Now, I mean, she very well could be, but that's really aside from the point. Aside from that, I guess I just don't understand how you can call a person a friend and just hang them out to dry like that. Like, even if Issa Rae wasn't directly involved or like wasn't her situation, you couldn't step in and be like, hey, can y'all squash this? Or like, hey, like what's going on? You just basically called to say that I'm just going to remove myself and y'all need to handle it. Like, that's just so weird. One of your employees, you couldn't wrangle them in. That's just, I don't get that.
Like Hollywood doesn't know your, like the people don't know your publicist. They know your name. So your name had to be somewhere in the planning. I could be wrong. I don't know how this works, but I would think that.
Yeah, that would make Lisa the most sense. Like she's the big name. Planning. So I don't know. I just thought that was, I have no reason to doubt Amanda Seals, but if it happened that way, then I'm just very confused as to why she was hung out to dry like that. I don't understand. Now, I'm not trying to say she's, you know, completely innocent and everything. Obviously, she has something to do with, you know, she's not some eternal victim. But, like, in this scenario, yeah, like, she didn't do anything wrong. So, yeah.
Before I go to this point, but I want to see if Nyjah had something to say.
As far as, like, yeah, that whole thing with her seemingly being alienated, I'm already indifferent towards Amanda, and so, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, it's like everywhere you go, it's always something. So it's like, after a while, it's like, is it them? Is it you? Cause you know, when she, I don't know, cause I was kind of like in and out just now. So I don't know if y'all mentioned when she was one of the hosts for The Real. And.
No. Oh yeah. We didn't mention it specifically, but we mentioned she was a host, but we didn't say The Real specifically.
Oh yeah. So like, you know, even during that time and, you know, cause she was only there for a short spell and then, you know, she was gone, you know, it's something, it's her energy. It's something. And we'll get more into that, like, once we get, you know, beyond the whole Issa Rae, thing, but yeah, you explained it well. Cause I honestly didn't really know the intricacies of that, like how that whole thing had played out. So yeah, that's crazy to invite somebody and then all of a sudden, like, now you're not on the list. Yeah, that would make anybody feel away.
Right.
So yeah. I was gonna say that's all I really have, like, specific to that.
For that. Yeah, and I believe her story. Like, it was, like, she gave details. So, like, I'm like, okay, like, I believe her story. And one of the things she did say was that, like, when this whole shindig was happening, like, in the space where she was getting kicked out, she said there were a lot of people she knew in the industry at the party who just stopped, who just stared and didn't do anything and didn't say anything.
That's the insult to injury right there.
Right, and she mentioned that was what hurt the most. Not the point that she's physically being removed, but that no one even said anything. And so she was like, I left crying and sobbing because it was a humiliating moment, which I feel for her. Like, that, if that happened to me, that would be humiliating. And I will be pissed. That story specifically, I was like, okay, so, like, like David said, she must be one of the most, the worst luck ever. But there was, like, other stories that she was like, I've been fired from this job. And, you know, when I'm not taking away from her experiences, she probably did have bad experiences at these jobs. But it did seem like, oh, everywhere you go, there's an issue. And as a person, I know that a lot of industries are just toxic across the board.
Mm-hmm.
So you are going to go into a lot of spaces where you don't have a good experience, and I know that for sure. But it just seemed like, you know, to me, it's tricky because it's like, yes, there are a lot of toxic spaces, and you have every right to feel the way you feel. However, it's like, step back for a moment though and analyze and be like, but okay, one, why do you keep going into these spaces? Like, if you know, like, she's been in the game for a while. So that means that she has to have some form of intuition, right? How do you keep ending up in these situations or these environments? And how have you looked back at the how you are in these environments? And, you know, I'll be honest, there are some unlikable qualities of Amanda. She can be a lot. And I know for a lot of actors are actors, but a lot of actors are introverts. And so I can see Amanda on sets and she's being who she is. And there's nothing wrong with being who she is. But someone is like, oh, she's a lot and I can't handle her. I can do that.
I was going to say, so two things. The first thing is, for all those people that were there, the people that she thought were her friends, the people, you know, like the industry folks that she knew, because of the fact, and this is just me kind of thinking out loud, I think that them not saying anything is probably because they all have probably felt some type of way, and that was kind of like their way of just like showing her that she's, you know, like showing her how they truly felt by not doing anything, because your silence can be just as loud. Mm-hmm. So I think that because she's had so many issues over time, people probably felt some type of way about her, probably never actually said anything, but that was their moment to kind of show their true feelings by not doing anything. So maybe that was a thing. And then the other thing that I was going to say, piggybacking off, and I was going to get into that, even when you, and we're going to talk about the whole Club Shay Shay thing, within the first 40, I texted y'all and was like, I'm only 20 minutes in and I'm already over it. I was 45 minutes in and I was already over it. Because one thing that you can say about her for sure is that she's one of those people where she explained it, that she's a very literal person. And so it's not always about like emotion with her, but she's one of those people where she wants everyone to listen and to accept what she has to say because she has expertise, but she doesn't find value in listening to what someone else has to say. Because even when she was talking to Shannon Sharp, she was so combative with him, and he's just trying to kind of like, just kind of get clarification and trying to tell her something. So, you know, for instance, where he said, you know, when she was talking about the white teacher that had got mad at her when she was younger, and you know, she was correcting the teacher and stuff. And all he was saying was, well, you know what? Was that a specific thing for you? Or also, you know, what he's experienced and what a lot of people experience is adults just in general do not like being corrected. And she thought that he was trying to diminish her experience. Like, she's one of those people where she's very combative, but then she'll try to tell you that you're combative. Like, she's one of those. And so it's like, it could be very exhausting, and everything just seems to be a fight with her. Everything is, it always comes down to some type of fight, and she'll have this very nasty disposition and very, she'll just be so ill-mannered towards you. And it's like, you're just trying to have a conversation. Cause Shannon Sharp is, you know, if you watch an interview, he's not somebody where he tries to alienate someone or tries to diminish your experience or something. He's having, you know, y'all are having a conversation, but just from watching that alone and then knowing other additional things, you know, if you watch any of her videos, if you're on YouTube, not YouTube, if you're on Instagram, and if you know about how loud she can be, but she does lack accountability in certain situations. So it's like, When do you take a step back to check your own energy in situations? Not to say that she hasn't come across people that could have absolutely done something to her. I would never try to say that because I'm not there. But based off of what I've seen, she can be combative and she can have all of these unlikable qualities and traits. And it's like, when do you take a step back as an adult while you're analyzing everyone else and what they're talking about and what they're doing? When do you sit back and look at your energy and what type of energy you're putting out?
No, yeah, I agree. And, you know, I'm glad you brought that up with the Club Shay Shay. And now, we talked about this before, and we can go back. This goes all the way back to when Shannon Sharp interviewed Cat Williams. I do personally believe Shannon Sharp he's definitely not a skilled journalist. He just has conversations, but which is fine. But I do think, if he's going to continue to have these comedians or actors come on his set to have these interviews, he probably should get some lessons on interviewing. Because when he has people like this on his show, he had a lot of big personalities. You need to be a skilled interviewer to handle big personalities. And so, like, people like Torrey, who is a skilled interviewer and journalist, I think he could have went tit-to-tat with Amanda, because Torrey, well, not only is he skilled in his craft, but he I'm not saying Shannon Sharp can't keep up with Amanda, but Torrey has the skills too. And so I think Amanda would have been less disrespectful and combative if someone like a Torrey was interviewing.
Yeah, I'm not even... Yeah, I'm not even. I was like three of that. That is too much. And then when it's a 3-hour interview with Amanda Seales, I'm gonna have to really break that down. But also, you at this point, he's like 3-4, maybe like 3 seasons in or something of his show. So there's enough to even. And he's always said, he's like, I'm not a journalist. I'm not a skilled journalist. He's like, uh-oh. Can y'all hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay. But he's like, he always says that he always prefaces by saying that he's not a skilled journalist, and he's never advertised himself that way. Not to say that you're doing that. But he's always said, like, I'm not a journalist. I'm not this. I'm not that. Like, he's not trying to be like the next Jay Leno or whoever the case may be. Like, he's just Shannon Sharpe having conversation with the woo. But also, you know, in addition to, and at the same time, even though he's not a skilled journalist, I do believe and I do agree with you, Paul, that yes, you can always use some type of improvement, especially when it comes down to interviewing styles and stuff and kind of tweaking things a bit. Because, you know, the thing about it is every single guest is different. It's not going to be a one size fit all. So you should, you know, at least have some type of skill set to where you can help to kind of navigate certain conversations depending on who you're with. So I agree with that. But in addition to that, I also believe that if we're already like 3 seasons into this, y'all should know exactly who you're sitting down with and how he does things and who you're talking to as well. So there needs to be on both sides, there should be some type of research to know like what type of setting you're going to be in and who's going to be who you're going to be sitting with and things of that nature.
Yeah. I agree with that. And that gives us to our last point, is that after this interview came out, she got on social media and criticized Club Shay Shay and his team, basically calling it Club Mess, because she felt that the interview caused more drama. And that was when I agree with you, Nyjah. I said, rewind. Amanda, you asked to be on the show. Also, you know how
Club Shay Shay is. That was strange.
Did you not do your research before going on the show?
That's like
someone saying like, oh, I'm gonna go on a Breakfast Club, and then when they go through a mess with Charlamagne, they come off like, I didn't expect to be disrespected or have all that. Did you not watch the show before you went on there?
Exactly. And so it's like, it's stuff like that. It's like when you see how she, like when you see her interactions and then when you see how she goes, she turns right around to complain. She's the only one. No one has sat with Shannon Sharpe and complained afterwards and said, oh, things got worse for me since sitting down with you or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, no, you are the person that needs to learn how to conduct yourself in certain spaces. The thing with her is if you tell her that she needs to conduct herself in a certain light or something, she's going to say, you're trying to diminish my, like who I am as a person. You're trying to diminish Amanda Seales. You're trying to do this, this, that, and the third. She's one of those people, like it just always turns into something. And that's what makes it exhausting. Again, for her to be on the front lines, because I texted this, I appreciate her being on the front lines. I appreciate her using the educational background that she has for good. I appreciate the fact that she's not afraid to speak vicious truths, especially when they're needed, when we are dealing with people in the industry who are cowardice and who are willing to protect their relationships and their money and everything else, as opposed to talking about human rights and talking about things that really matter. So, you know, my hat's off to her. Because I appreciate, especially as a woman, a Black woman in that space, and especially even while being alienated, she still continues to speak truth. She still continues to utilize her platform to talk about what's going on in the world around us. So I appreciate that. However, in terms of personality, I mean, it's so exhausting because everything always comes back to being a fight with you. It's like, where is your inner peace, ma'am? Seriously.
Yeah. And on that note, we're going to take a quick break. Welcome to the Color Lavender Podcast, a podcast that talks about what is going on in the world we live in and how it affects queer folks.
There should be a crime against delusion.
And then she'll do all the shit. She did Roman's Revenge, and she did Roman Reloaded, Roman Unloaded, Roman Catholic.
She was like, he's a softest Care Bear pussy.
New episodes every Wednesday on your favorite podcast platform. And we're back.
Back.
All right. This next topic is kind of deals with the Amanda Seals. Well, sort of. Basically, we're going to talk about celebrities that we cannot stand. And it's because they are just bigots. They're annoying. They're horrible people. And, you know, the worst people are also the loudest. And right, we didn't do Donald Trump, we didn't do Mike Pence, we didn't do Ron DeSantis, we didn't do those. We did basically a lot of people in Hollywood mainly that are just, we can't stand. So we each chose three people, and we're just going to explain briefly about why we can't stand them. The first person I want to talk about is J.K. Rowling. I'm pretty sure I don't need to do an introduction with her, but for those who don't know who this person is, J.K. Rowling is the writer and creator of the Harry Potter world. So she is still currently the richest author in the world. Harry Potter is a cultural phenomenon, so she is filthy rich and she is big. However, despite the fact that she created a piece of work that has was a cultural phenomenon and basically molded a whole generation, she continues to tarnish her reputation by being a TERF. And for those who don't know who that is, TERFs are people who are basically transphobic. But specifically, they're transphobic. It's women who are transphobic. So cis women who have something against trans women and deny their existence as a woman. J.K. Rowling has routinely said and tweeted and been on interviews talking about how she does not believe in trans women and how the whole concept of being a trans woman is an abomination to womanhood. And the one example she keeps using as a motivational why she says this shit is because she's like, well, a cis man who was born male at birth can easily transition and use this new identity to inflict harm on women, aka that they can inflict sexual assault. She keeps using that excuse. And okay, for those, J.K. Rowling is a victim of sexual assault. She actually mentions this biography, I can't remember, but a long time ago, she had a very abusive husband and her husband has sexually abused her before she started writing the Harry Potter novels. Not taking that away from her, that she was a victim of sexual assault. However, to use that to literally deny the existence of an entire group of people, it's fucked up. And I'm so sick of J.K. And the thing is, though, she continues to say these things without any motivation. So recently, she out of the blue tweeted or whatever, I'm very disappointed in Daniel Radcliffe and Emma Watson. Daniel Radcliffe played Harry and Emma Watson played Hermione. I'm so disappointed in them because how dare they be supporters of trans rights? That is like, how dare they do that? This that whole wild concept is an abomination to womanhood and what it means to be a woman. They owe me an apology. First of all, Daniel Radcliffe and Emma Watson are not stunting you, bitch. They're not even thinking about you. They're living their own lives, filthy rich, and going on their business. No one's even thinking about you, JK. Also, an apology for what? Because they actually support people in their rights? That whole thing was wild. And I'm so glad. I think Daniel Radcliffe and Emma Stone responded. It was basically like, what is the problem with supporting people and their rights? It was like something basic like that. But it was like J.K. Rowling. It cost $0.00 to shut the fuck up. It does. It like I just cannot understand, woman, how you are literally the most famous author in the 21st century, and you are just being the most disgusting person known right now. Enough of her. Next. Caitlyn Jenner. Caitlyn fucking Jenner. Caitlyn Jenner is a trans woman. Many people may know her by her dead name, formerly known as Bruce Jenner. Caitlyn Jenner is the mom of Kylie and Kendall, was previously married to Kris Jenner, and was the former step-parent of the Kardashians.
I think it was 15.
Caitlyn Jenner transitioned in what, 2016? 2015?
Like 16, I think.
16. It was huge. It was huge news. It was huge, especially for the queer community, because we're like, whoa, like this is, you never, especially someone who was an athlete coming out as trans. That was a huge moment. Ever since that announcement, Caitlyn Jenner has been an abomination and a stain on the LGBTQ plus community. Because Caitlyn Jenner, despite that she is a trans woman, she is right wing. She's Trump supporting. She's transphobic herself. And she is literal filth. For example, Caitlyn Jenner has routinely said that she does not believe in equal gay rights because of the church. Caitlyn Jenner has also said that Trans Visibility Day, which is March 31st, and has been March 31st for over a decade, decided to tweet at Joe Biden and say that, how dare you make this day the same day as Easter? Number one, dumbass. Easter is not March 31st every single year. Easter changes every year based on a full moon in the spring. March 31st has been Trans Visibility Day since over a decade ago. So you said nothing about this date in the years past, but since Easter happens to fall on that day, you have a problem. Caitlyn Jenner is the prime example of a trans woman who believes that trans people should not have rights except her.
About to say, because she definitely was all about, oh, being trans and being openly trans and being visible and being this, that, and the third, was she won Woman of the Year.
Right.
So yeah, she's one of the people that like to reap the benefits like of being a white woman, essentially. She's one of them people. But here's my thing. If you hate yourself, then just say that. Because how do you go from doing all of this, becoming trans, just to say trans people shouldn't have rights, and yourself, you are one of the loudest people against really trans does rights and trans everything? You hate yourself, bro. Chill out.
Right.
That's,
she does. She hates herself. And oh, last thing with her. She tweeted recently, when O.J. Simpson passed away, she said, good riddance. Now, black people ate her up. Despite the fact that we all know O.J. was guilty. And like, O.J. was very problematic. We all know that. But the fact that Caitlyn Jenner had the audacity to tweet good riddance. Caitlyn Jenner, you're also a murderer. Because didn't you murder a woman in a car accident?
Who?
Like, you killed a whole ass woman. Also, you don't get to say good riddance to O.J. Simpson. You don't have that right. I'm sorry, you don't. You don't. And yeah, Black Twitter ate her up.
Messy, messy. Because she was in the courtroom when that was going on. I think she was sitting with Chris.
Yeah, she... Caitlyn, just shut up. Shut up.
Lord,
and then lastly, the Eric Adams, who is the mayor of New York City.
Yo, bestie.
Eric Adams makes me want to... I gag every time I see his face on the TV. First of all, he sounds like an idiot. He has said so many things that were problematic that it's too many to count. Eric Adams prides himself on being the winner of the mayoral race, but he forgets to mention that the turnout for the mayoral race during his election was one of the lowest in history of New York City. He won by default.
Ooh. What?
Eric Adams, you don't mention that. You didn't win because people like you. You won because no one voted. So the little scrap of votes you got for the Democratic Party, you were able to win. No one likes you. You're an abomination. You stop worrying about the rats when you had an apartment building that you owned that was rat infested and you got summoned by the court. Let's not forget the FBI is investigating you.
So my first person, and y'all have heard me on this pod reference her multiple times. My first one is J-Lo herself, Miss Jenny from the block, from Brooklyn, getting her ham and cheese on a roll and the orange drink. If you know, you know. We do not know. Pretty sure we don't. But anyway, I am not a fan of J-Lo at all. I have not been for quite a long time. In fact, I would argue the last two good things that three good things that she did was Get Right, the song. Y'all know how much of a bop that is. The Selena movie and Enough. If you know about Enough, you really know. Because that movie, she did her thing. I'm not even going to lie. I don't like giving her credit, but she did her thing with Enough. But yeah, she spent an entire career stealing vocals, stealing music. You know, she spent an entire career doing that. From what I gathered, and I could be wrong here, she had teamed up, and Paul, you can correct me, or Nigel, y'all might know better than me. Didn't she sort of team up with Tommy Mottola, who is Mariah Carey's ex-husband? Is that right? So I'm just looking up examples. Y'all know the song Get Right, right? Which probably is her best song. Do y'all remember the song by A. Marie, One Thing? Do y'all remember that song?
Mm-hmm.
You know the story. Yeah. So I don't remember the exact details.
Oh, yes. And I know the story.
So, Paul, you can tell the story if you'd like.
Which one?
One thing. One Thing from Anne Marie.
Yeah. Oh, I love this one.
Well, just to make things simple, basically, Anne Marie and her team made a song called One Thing. And behind Anne Marie's back, they were shopping it with J-Lo to sing. And J-Lo was going to take the song. But Anne Marie said, uh-uh, bitch. And Anne Marie released her version, not even telling the label.
Stealing Ashanti's vocals from I'm Real. Do y'all understand that for all these years, I thought I'm Real was Ashanti featuring Ja Rule? All these years, I thought I'm Real was an Ashanti song. I look and it's J-Lo. I said, how? This Ashanti's vocals. And I'm looking here. Let's go down the list, and this is the last point I'll make on the stolen thing. I'm reading an article. J-Lo has stolen or attempted to steal from artists, including Usher, A. Marie, Brandi Norwood, Mariah Carey, Maya, and so many more. I think I can put that out there when I just say she's a thief, and I don't like it. Moving on. So, my next person actually makes me sad because this person actually was the reason that I started singing. And that person is Brian McKnight. Brian McKnight literally, and this is not a joke, Brian McKnight literally used to be my vocal inspiration. I started singing because of One Last Cry. He's one of the best male, he's one of the best singers of all time. I don't care what anybody says. You can't have a top 10 list and not have Brian McKnight. He's just that good. As far as a musician, he is a legend. But as a person, he is hot booty butt cheek trash. And that starts because of, I mean, that's what he is. That is because he decided a few years ago that he was going to no longer acknowledge his biological children from his first marriage. Instead, he was going to disown them and only acknowledge his current wife and his children with his current wife. There's a very long story about, you know, what was said and what went on, but I'm just going to stick on a few points. Point number one, Brian McKnight has a son, a 25-year-old son named Brian McKnight Jr. Let me say that again. Brian McKnight has a 25-year-old son named Brian McKnight Jr. Okay? Keep that in mind. Brian McKnight also has a now, the 25-year-old Brian McKnight Jr. is from Brian McKnight Sr.'s first marriage. Okay? Brian McKnight has two sons with and two daughters with his current wife, who is Filipino. I'm only putting that in there just to make this point. Brian McKnight's children with his current wife are Clyde, Nico, Brianna, and, are you ready for this? Brian McKnight Jr. This man has a 25-year-old son named Brian McKnight Jr. and has a child, kid, also named Brian McKnight Jr. I literally do not know where to begin with that. How do you have two children with the same name? That part is ridiculous, okay? When I heard that, I was like, oh, he might be the devil. And then it gets worse. This is where I lost all respect for Brian McKnight. All respect. So he tried to say his kids was thieves and all this other stuff, and one of his kids stole from him and all that. Okay, whatever. But when he said that his daughter, his oldest daughter, he accused his oldest daughter of having an inappropriate, incestuous relationship with her cousin, I lost all respect. Because that was not based in any fact. It was not based in any reality. It was literally said to hurt her. And she ended up suing him for defamation, because you can't just go to the media and just tell outright lies that hurt people's reputations. So when he did that, trying to make her look bad, I said, I'm off Brian McKnight. Off Brian McKnight. And there's a whole lot of other stuff. There's many articles. Look it up. He has proven himself in the last couple years to be not only just a terrible husband, he is a horrible father, and he is an even worse person. And the last point I'm going to make, he was married to his previous wife, I believe, for a decade plus. And he's been married to his current wife for, you know, a few years now. He actually said that all of his music, all his love songs he's ever made, he's been active since the late, I think, 89 or 90. All of his past songs aren't about anyone except his current wife, even though he was married at the time that he was making these. How is that pop? He said his past music is about his current wife. The man is literally delusional. So I'm not going to spend too much time, because I'm going to get sad and mad all over again. And then the last person I have on my list, I have alluded to this person on this podcast on a couple of occasions, but I have never said why I have an issue. And that person is Donnie McClurkin. The reason why I have an issue with Donnie McClurkin and also folks of his ilk. So backstory, Donnie McClurkin is gay. That's not a lie, that he literally has admitted it. But he claims that through the power of prayer, he is no longer gay. And last time I checked, that's not how that works. You can't pray that away. It don't go away. You're gay now, you've been gay. So the reason why, see, and that by itself isn't the issue. The problem I have with that belief, not just from him, but also from the church and from other people, Jackie Hill Perry is another one, but, you know, so she's in his ilk, is the fact that you go to churches with, you talk about how impressionable children are, you go to churches and spew this nonsense to children or teenagers who are listening to this, trying to figure themselves out. And you not only have convinced them of something that literally is just utter nonsense, but you've effectively told them that what they're struggling with doesn't matter. And then this fool had the nerve to get on and say, well, I'm struggling to find a wife. I don't understand why I can't find a wife. Well, yeah, you can't find a wife because you don't like women. Paul don't like either. I'm sure he would have problems finding a wife. So I have an issue with the fact that he is, not that he feels that way, even though I think that that's just bullshit because you can't pray that away. But the fact that he is presenting that as something legitimate, as something that is possible when it is not, and is something to be shameful. Dear God, I have to find this, but before I finish, I have to make this point. He made a comment basically saying that men are only gay because they don't have a relationship with their father, because they were assaulted, because something happened to him, which, not taking away from that. But again, that's harmful rhetoric. It just is. And Paul and I are both queer. I haven't had anything like that happen to me. I can't speak for Paul. And if that has happened, that's none of our business. But I can tell you there's plenty of folks who have not dealt with that who are still gay. I can tell you people who have dealt with it that are straight. It is a ridiculous assertion to group all of these people together and make that claim. It is dangerous. It is harmful rhetoric. And that man, for putting that out there as if it is legitimate, should be ashamed of himself. And once I heard him say that, and I heard that nonsense he was peddling about Pray the Gay Away, I had zero respect for Donnie McClurkin after that, especially what he did to Tone. You know, when he came out and he was a gospel singer and all that, all the stuff he was saying about him, I have no respect for Donnie McClurkin after I heard all that. So yeah, those are my people. That's my piece I have to say about that. But yeah, Nigel, go ahead.
Okay, so I have two people, but honestly, I think I know who my third person is probably going to be. But so far, I'm just going to go ahead and jump right into it. Kanye West is my first person. Listen, I know that he used to stand for something. He used to be, you know, one of the more prominent rappers. He started, I think his first album was like 2003 with College Dropout. And, you know, he was the backpacker. He had a soulfulness to his music. And, you know, he was just one of those people that you can look to get a really good message. There was substance in what he had to talk about. He talked about what happened in the world around us. He talked about what happened in our communities. He talked about the industry. He definitely exposed a lot. Just for him, years later, to turn into the very same people that he used to ridicule. When he said, live on national television when he was standing next to Mike Meyer. And I think he was standing next to Mike Meyer. And when they were live on television during the Hurricane Katrina situation, he said, George Bush doesn't like black people. And it's like, you were the person that we looked to continue to utilize your platform to talk about, you know, the politicians and the people that were doing us wrong and that would play in our faces. And then you literally turned into that person that plays in our faces. I am one of those people where I know how to separate art from the person. Yes, you did have some good stuff. And honestly, his music hasn't been good as of late anyway. So, but yeah, I can appreciate what you did before, but that does not, it doesn't negate your irresponsibility with your platform today. Kanye has completely done a 180, in my humble opinion. He has shown us continuously that he only looks at us as pawns. He only looks at us as people that he wants to continue to make money off of. You know, he doesn't talk to us about anything until it's time for him to sell a product. Usually he has these manic episodes where he starts to do a lot of unnecessary stuff. And the thing about it is with the whole mental health thing, Kanye is one of those people where every single person in the industry, rappers, all gave him all of the excuses under the sun about, well, mental health, mental health, mental health. And the thing is, while we are talking about mental health issues and while we're talking about it, especially with black people, with black men, because this is a conversation that growing up, we didn't have these types of conversations. Our parents didn't have these types of conversations. Mental health is definitely buzzwords and, you know, today, but it's very, very important. And me saying that they're buzzwords, it's not to diminish the true meaning behind, you know, having these important conversations. However, you have to be very careful as to what you label as a mental health crisis, because when you just sit here and you think that just because he goes around and have these random moments where he's going and talking about people and calling names and all this other stuff, you can't just automatically deem that as being a mental health situation. And the thing about it is, you know what? We all three of us, we know a lot about mental health. We all study different mental health disorders and stuff like that. I do just in leisure. Paul, you know, where you work, you have no choice. That's your job. And David, you're also well-versed with understanding mental health as well. And, you know, we all have our personal experiences with anxiety, things of that nature. However, there isn't any disorder that makes you come out of nowhere to vilify your own people and to say hurtful things to your own people. What mental health disorder is there where you're going to just go on a platform to say that black people, that we were afraid to leave our oppressors? Where is it? What disorder is out there where you say stuff like slavery was a choice? You know, like there's a lot of things that he says with an absence of thought, and he does not care about how it truly affects other people. But yet when you do something to him, all of a sudden he has an issue and now he has to go and expose people. He feels the need to expose big names, but you're only doing this because these people don't want anything to do with you anymore. You're not exposing anybody because they did something that was harmful to our community or because they were harmful to other people. You're not exposing anybody talking about Adidas or anybody else that you have had big deals with. You're not exposing stuff because of the fact that they did something harmful. You're only exposing them because they're cutting ties with you. And this is your way of getting in front of it and not taking any type of accountability or energy. So going back to how we talked about Amanda Seales, if you have an issue with everybody, but yet you're not checking your own energy, it's the same thing with him. You do not check your own energy. You do not take accountability or onus for what you do or say and how it affects people. Therefore, I do not like you at all. There is nothing you can possibly say to me that is ever going to make me like him again. There is nothing that you can say to me that is going to make me say, you know what, but he did give us College Dropout. He did give us Jesus Walks. I don't give a shit. That shit was back in 2003. This is 2024. You have continued to show your ass. You have continued to be very disrespectful. The whole thing with you and Trump during that time, we know what Trump stands for. We know what type of things that he's commissioned, the type of fuckery and buffoonery that he summoned during his years. And you were right there with him during his shenanigans, wanting validation. You seek out validation from all the wrong places because you deep down inside, you don't love yourself. You can sit here and say that he misses his mom. That's okay. Grief does work. Grief creeps up and it affects people in different ways. True. You can say that he's probably having issues, you know, more mentally because of, you know, his divorce with Kim Kardashian. Some people like to blame Kim Kardashian for some of his stuff. Yeah, you both were enablers when y'all were married because you weren't necessarily correcting the things that she was doing and how she, you know, appropriates our culture and everything else. You weren't doing that. And she's not correcting you on some of the things that you were doing because you guys, but y'all cared more about making money together and continuing to build an empire. Therefore, I don't, like, fuck you. Okay. I don't have anything nice to say about your ass. I don't give a fuck about your ass. Whatever. So that's my whole thing with Kanye West. Or Kanye, whichever you want to call him. Chance the Rapper. I cannot fucking stand Chance the Rapper. I don't care about all the good deeds that he did before. Chance is a fucking idiot. First of all, I started losing respect for him when the R. Kelly situation was underway. And I told y'all, and this was something that was actually on the on one of the episodes, when he sat there and said that he did not believe the victims of R. Kelly, excuse me, because they were Black women. How you as a Black man who was raised by Black people in Chicago can sit here and say that you did not believe victims because of the fact that they were Black women. That to me, I'm like, okay, so you're already an idiot. Mind you, I'm the type of person where it doesn't matter the new artist or the new rapper that's like the phenomenon where everyone's like, oh my gosh, they're next up, they're next, they're this big rapper, they have the biggest song. Anybody that people are giving praise to, I legitimately am like, you know what, they're gonna fuck up soon because they always do. You literally, rest assured, when it comes down to majority of celebrities, 9 times out of 10, they're gonna fuck up. And they're going to show you their true colors, especially when they get into a certain pocket. Not all of them, but you definitely have a huge amount of celebrities that just show you how fucking stupid they really are. And that's the reason why, you know, role models and shit, I'd be trying to tell people, like, your role models should hopefully be people that are in your immediate proximity. But you know what? You do have some role models that might be, you know, celebrities and stuff. And I'm not going to vilify you or condemn you for having celebrities as, like, you know, your inspiration, because there are some really good role models out there that can inspire. But it's just that a lot of these celebrities today, they go from sugar to shit. They have shitty personalities. They show you, you know, time and time again that they're fucking idiots. They misuse their platforms all the time. And there's just a clear difference between the celebrities today versus like the celebrities from when we were kids or even before we were born, you know, going back to the 60s and the 50s when you actually seen them on the front lines fighting for shit. But yeah, so that's like my little quick thing. But Chance the Rapper, yeah, after the whole R. Kelly thing, his comments on that pissed me off. Then the bitch had the nerve to like, just every fucking time he talks, he just pisses me off. Like, he tried to say that Justin Bieber's album from like a couple years ago was on the same level as like is Off the Wall from Michael Jackson. And I'm like, you really irritate my fucking soul. Like, you made my ass itch. Every fucking time you talk, you piss me off. And then when Kanye was running for president or, you know, was doing his whole shit, Chance the Rapper was one of the main people that supported his bullshit. At no point during that whole time did you stop to hold this man accountable. You and other big name rappers. Y'all sat there and was like, oh yeah, he talking facts. He's speaking facts. He's speaking from a business standpoint. We need people like Kanye. We need this. We need this and all this other shit. The reason why the country is in shambles now is because there's so much individualism that's promoted. And it's not the type of individualism as it pertains to community. It's like, no, I got to get mine. Fuck everybody else. I got to get mine. And so Kanye is one of the biggest people that does that of I got to get mine. I don't care about anybody else. Why would you want to support someone who's not going to fight for you when it's time? Why would you ever want to have someone like that? And if the motherfucker got all these mental health problems and shit that y'all claim that he has, and you've seen the manic episodes, you've seen the type of shit that he does, you see how he exposes every goddamn thing. The bitch can't hold water for shit. Why the fuck would you ever want somebody to be in the highest position in the country? And like, it just, so yeah, so the whole time I heard an interview that he did with Joe Budden on the Joe Budden podcast, and just everything that he said, just supporting Kanye was fucking dumb. And it all went back to his support. He supported him so much because he inspired him to become a rapper. That him inspiring you to become a rapper is very fucking different than him running for president and wanting to utilize his platform and his fame in a selfish way. It's two different fucking things. Two things can be true. A motherfucker can inspire you, but then you can also hold their ass to the fire
very much
and do some dumb shit. But this right. bitch is incapable of doing that. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, like David Lilly just said, Brian McKnight inspired him to be a singer, but he also acknowledges that Brian McKnight is a problematic asshole.
Right. Yes. And so, yeah. So Chance, during all of that shit, I'm like, you know what? I really just don't fucking like you. And that's just what it is. And so, yeah, he irritates the shit out of me. My last person I'm going to go ahead and add in here. And you know what? Paul, you know, I used to have a crush on this guy back, you know, back then. But you know what? I grew up. Everyone grows up. You realize, you know what? That was a terrible fucking mistake to have a crush on this person. And what the fuck was I thinking? 50 Cent. Listen, he gets on my everlasting fucking nerve. Like, it's like he manages to find that one nerve that he doesn't, because he doesn't know that I exist, but somehow he knows my nerves exist, and he stomps on that shit every fucking time. And I'm just like, what the hell? He is such a problematic person, but yet again, so many people applaud him because of his status, right? Now, granted, out hats off to him. He worked his ass off to get where he is. This is not a situation of nepotism. This is not a situation of him doing bad business. People that have done business with him, they usually have good things to say about him. You know, people applaud him for, you know, his mind, his business mind, because, you know, he definitely, when you talk about clothing, you talk about brand deals, who's a better example than 50, honestly. And he got it out the mud. He really did. He had to really work hard. So I'll give him that. I'll give you your kudos and your props, because what you're doing right now, you've worked for it. Good for you. However, your personality, dude, he's one of those people where when people aren't even talking to him, he just comes out of nowhere because he's such a drama-filled person. And it's like, you literally show us that you can have all the money in the world and all the fame, and yet you're still miserable enough to where you feel the need to talk shit about people that, and it's a situation that ain't got nothing to do with you. He has always made it his business to comment on situations. And it's like, you think this shit is funny. You are all of 40 something years old. At some point in your life, when the fuck do you shut the fuck up and go and be happy with your riches, with your family, with your kids, whatever the fuck? Also, the whole situation with him and his son. I lost mad respect for him when he started to treat his son the way, his oldest son, the way that he did. Talking about him the way that he did, you know, in interviews, saying, this is not my child, you're your mother's son, and all this other stuff. But the whole thing is, you're sitting here making your son pay for the choices and mistakes of his mother. You have a beef with his mom. His mom was the one that was saying that, oh, your dad is doing this and your dad doesn't care about this because you don't have all the money, you don't have all the shoes, you don't have all the latest, this, that, and the third, so your dad doesn't care. Meanwhile, you were trying to raise your child to actually have some type of principles and have some type of discipline and work hard for what they get, just like you did. Understandable. But yet you sat there and said some of the most nastiest things about your child, who looks just like you, by the way. You said some of the most nastiest things about him. You even talked about one day he said, if my son was to get hit by a bus or some shit and die, like I would have a good day. Like,
oh, what wow.
type of man? Yes. Like, what type of man are you to say that? Now, granted, I could be missing a whole lot of shit, right? Because I'm not in their life. I could be missing some text messages and other exchanges and things of that nature that could have happened between him and his son. But at the end of the day, you and his mom Y'all are the nucleus of that beef. It has nothing to do really with him. And you're talking about his entitlement, but understand that she was the custodial parent. Therefore, she, all that bitterness that she had, she put into him. But why can't you separate him from his mom? And why can't you continue to just try to be a dad? You were a stay-at-home dad before you became a rapper, bro. Like, I read his he had a memoir. You were a stay-at-home dad. He was your best friend. You took him places. Y'all did so much. And then shit went to shit. And so it's like, I don't understand. Me personally, I don't know how any woman can lay with a man when you know that he disrespects his child. I don't know how any woman can lay with you and have another child with you knowing how you treat the first one. I don't know. Like, to me, when you, and I am definitely not the type of person to tell somebody that they're less of a man, because I don't know the first thing about manhood. But I will say that is a poor excuse of a father when you do stuff like that. And you're not a man if you can honestly sit there and talk about your child the way that you do and then go and make another child and then go and parade him around and make it seem like he's the greatest thing in the world. So literally similar to Brian McKnight, how he kind of disowned the first set. Now he's parading the new one, the new family around. Literally 50 did the same shit. And it is so crazy. And the thing that makes it worse is all of 50 Cent's fans, they are some of the most unnecessary dick riding ass bitches I have ever seen. You motherfuckers, you know what? It is clear as day that you motherfuckers are mad at the world because your daddies didn't kiss you, bitch. This is what this is. Because there's no way in the world that y'all can see this shit play out and y'all are sitting here talking about, well, you know, his son did this and his son did that. His son did things because he was lashing out. His son did things because he was young and he was pissed off that the only way that he could see his dad is in fucking music videos and on Instagram and not really getting a chance to have a relationship with him. Like, come on, bro. So yeah, 50 has become definitely one of my most hated people. Yes, he does some good things for people. I don't want to diminish literally everything that he does, but I can separate the two. Two things can be true. You can go and have your shows and you can employ people. He gave Monique a job when she was alienated from everybody else. So thank you for making sure that Auntie Mo got, you know, that she got something going on outside of her comedy and all that other shit. Yes, you can absolutely help to put people in different positions, and he's done that. However, your spirit, honey, your spirit is nasty and you are very miserable and you do a lot of unnecessary shit and you've talked about people and you have definitely made some unnecessary and even homophobic comments and shit in your time. And so may God have mercy on your damn soul because you do too motherfucking much. Amy Winehouse, there's a biopic I had mentioned before. I don't know if it was on here or not, but she has there's a movie coming out. It's called Back to Black. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the name of her last album.
Yep.
When she was alive. Yeah. So it was already released in the UK on April 12th. And the US, I believe, is supposed to be out this month. Well, not this month. I mean, Lord, May. I thought it was May already. I think it's supposed to be out in May. I'm trying to find the date.
Yeah, Amy White. Yeah, she's unfortunately part of the 27 Club.
She is. Yeah, the 27 Club. Wow. Yeah, that, you know what? Hollywood has like some, like, it's crazy. Like, you have the 27 Club. Then when you look at like some of the stars that like died in like the same hotel rooms and all that stuff, or like, yeah, it's really wicked.
It is. And there was another one is, excuse me, it's all of the people who have died because of certain horror movies. Like the original Exorcist, there's a whole thing where it's called the Exorcist Curse. Because like a lot of actors and set people and crew people die mysteriously. See you next Wednesday. And don't forget, if you have a topic you want us to talk about or any advice or anything, please email us at tclavenderpodcast@gmail.com. or send us a DM. And that is all. Ciao for now.